evening. Welcome to the Salieri Report. Today is August 20th, 2015. I'm Catherine Alston Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. I'm speaking to you from Austin, Texas, long drive from California. We're having lunch with Catherine in Austin this Saturday. And for those of you who are coming, it's a really good group. I look forward to seeing you this weekend. We have posted lunch with Catherine on October 17th in Amsterdam in the Netherlands. If you're going to be in Europe at that time, I would encourage you to come. And finally, tickets are now available for the Secret Space Program Conference 2015. It's October 31st and November 1st over the weekend in Austin, Texas, or outside of Austin, Texas. There's a discount for Salieri readers and subscribers. If you go to the website, you can get that discount code for their website. And as I said, tickets are now available. Our theme tonight is equity markets correct. Global stock markets and the S&P are now in a loss position for the year, down about between 1% and 2%. That's a tiny amount, but it's important because if you look at the technical indicators, it certainly looks punk. The S&P is down 8% from its high, which was this year, and it has now fallen below the 200-day moving average, with the Nasdaq, the tech stocks, which have been very important to a strong market, also testing the 200-day line. So let's see if we get a bounce tomorrow or if they continue down. Very, very important sort of technical indicators where they're sitting. High-yield bonds are also correcting, and that's signaling a move to quality, which is to be expected coming into the fall. The chance of long overdue 10 to 25% correction in the stock market are now looking much higher. Again, we're down 8% from the high, so all it's going to take is another 2% to put us into that 10 to 25% correction zone. In my practice, I moved to much higher cash allocations at the beginning of the summer, but I'm starting to move to even higher again now. It could just be the summer doldrums, but there are too many legitimate concerns about what the slowdown in the global economy is doing and what a strong dollar combined with the Chinese devaluation could do to corporate earnings. If you look at the remaining strength in the U.S. equity markets, a lot of it is sectors subsidized by the U.S. government, healthcare, housing, defense, which is not a good sign. If this keeps up, the push to privatize K-12 education with Common Core is going to grow even stronger as corporations look for more monopolies funded by large parts of government money and mandated taxes. Sometimes I say that the U.S. stock market has become an economic heat-seeking missile, and too often the heat it's seeking is government-engineered monopolies. Money and markets. Since our theme is equity markets today, I thought I would start off with a roundup of all the markets. Let's look at what they are. The S&P down now 1.13% for the year. Gold came back this week. It's now down 2.76% for the year. Silver down 1.86%. So that's much improvement from a few weeks ago. Oil now down 39.23%. The plunge in commodities continue. If you look at the CRB index, it's now down 14% for the year. The place that's still above water is Germany, up 6.84%, but that's down from up almost 30% this year. China now down, the China large caps down 9.9%. The developed markets almost flat now. They're up less than 1%, 0.79% for the year. Emerging markets now down 14%, and that's before the Fed raises interest rates. So that, clearly the emerging market's soft. The bond aggregate down 0.5% for the year. TLT, the 20-year Treasury ETF, is now flat. It's down 0.8%, essentially flat for the year. The U.S. dollar index softened a little bit this week, and now it's up 6.1% for the year. That's after being up 12% for the year. Again, I've started to put our money and markets charts that I look at every Sunday night on the Friday close. We put them up on Sunday night, so we want them up by early Monday morning. And those are just charts that I'm looking at to monitor the market, and they change over time. But I thought getting them up would make it much easier for you. And so it's a good practice to, I like to sort of monitor everything according to the Friday weekly close. The China devaluation continues to reverberate around the world. The devaluation, clearly part of it was protecting exports. And then coincidence, the explosion in the fourth largest port closes or harms exports. I don't think that's a coincidence. It's sabotage. The question, of course, is who did it. And the players are many. Of course, you have to look at who got hurt. I put up a little comment on the blog because the picture of the crater created by the explosion at Tianjin is quite significant. It almost takes your breath away. And, you know, it's clearly not just an accidental explosion is what it looks like to me. I did point out, given how much China exports to Europe and Japan and how much the euro and the yen have fallen against the dollar, it's quite remarkable that the Chinese kept their currencies closely pegged to the dollar. All eyes are now on the Fed with the Chinese devaluation because in the July minutes, which were released this week, the Fed still indicated that all the economic conditions that would support an increase in interest rates in September are not yet there. And of course, with just sort of what's happened in the markets over the last week, there's now real questions in the marketplace as to whether or not the Fed's going to raise interest rate. It really puts Yellen in the hot seat because you see pension funds, insurance companies really struggling with no yield, not to mention what it's doing to savers all around the world. My bet is still 60-40. She raises them, so I think the needs of pension funds and insurance companies are going to outweigh the weakness in the global economy, but further deterioration could lower those chances, so I think it's still not a fait accompli. I put up two book reviews this week on topics which are pretty gruesome, following one I did last week, which is pretty gruesome. I think it's important because as I talk with different subscribers about the news, what I'm discovering is that they don't have a good sense of the technologies that are being used to control the markets. Controlling markets really means controlling people and controlling people in a way that scales up to controlling organizations, scaling up to controlling media, scaling up to controlling all sorts of different systems. But you really have to be able to control lots of people and exercise that control one-on-one in invisible ways. And so I thought it's a subtext to many stories, and whenever I'm trying to explain the stories and I find out that the difference between my take on things and someone else's take on things is the what I call the technologies of control, I finally sat down and said, okay, I have to unpack these. I've been looking for lots of different books or DVDs that would explain this, and so I ended up in the last couple of weeks reading about 8 books on the topic. And I put up reviews several weeks ago to Mark Rich, has 3 books, and it was titled The Nuts and Bolts of Tyranny. And then I found another series by a doctor in San Antonio, Dr. John Hall, called his most recent book is Guinea Pigs, Technologies of Control, which is a quick and easy overview. A lot of these books come with writing that's very angry. And you can it's clearly understandable why people are angry, but it detracts from learning about them if you're someone who's never experienced them in either you or someone close to you that you know. Anyway, so those two book reviews are up. One is Guinea Pigs, Technologies of Control, and the other is Mark Rich, The Nuts and Bolts of Tyranny. In the Guinea Pigs commentary, there's a video interview of Alex Jones with Dr. John Hall, which is a very good overview. I think it's not too long. It's about 15 minutes. And if you want to get a sense of some of this stuff, listening to that and then reading his book, Guinea Pigs, Technologies, Control, is not a bad idea. The other book review is called The Modern Mercenary, and it's a look at what it means that we now have created private companies that can field armies and the equivalent of a private intelligence agency. This is a very important development. If you look back through history, one of the things that brought us out of the Middle Ages is that we literally created a standard of international law that basically gave sovereign states a monopoly over force. Before then, you had all sorts of aristocrats and feudal lords and the Pope and the Vatican being able to field force and armies. And we're literally going back to a world where armies are not the monopolies of the sovereign state, and you're getting what's called a multipolar world that's very fractured, and many different players who are able to bring highly sophisticated and significant force to bear. To understand that, you need to understand the existence of private armies and intelligence agencies and sort of the history of them and what the big policy issues are. And a guy named Sean McFaith has written a book called The Modern Mercenary, and I wanted to get it because he has significant experience both as a soldier in the U.S. military and then working for a private contractor. And I think faced and lived with a lot of those different policy issues and then became an academic and really studied history and has sort of teed up the issues. So it's a very sobering development. It's a very frightening development. A lot of it really exploded with the U.S. expenditures in Iraq and Iran. So this is going to be a very significant global blowback that gets created by our doing this. Anyway, so those two things are a subtext in many other stories because there are a lot of different kinds of control mechanisms that couldn't occur if you didn't have very sophisticated private armies and intelligence agencies, and you didn't have these kinds of invisible technologies. So I think understanding them, I almost apologized and said, I know I'm leading you into the heart of darkness here, but I think it's very, very helpful to understand that this stuff exists. Presidential election. I usually, you know, try and avoid discussing the presidential election, but I confess I have now gotten into significant reading and following of the email issues that are dogging Hillary Clinton, and let me give you some of the reasons why. I am probably the only person you know whose company has spent $1 million on litigation related to email discovery and subpoenas. When you are a significant owner of a private business as an entrepreneur and you have to spend $1 million on email litigation, I assure you, you learn. It's a very arcane little area, but you learn a lot about it. In the middle of doing that, I was finally, in 1998, I was called in for an interview by the Department of Justice, who was investigating us. And this is after we'd spent most of the $1 million. And it was a very interesting discussion because we had numerous of the investigators and auditors asking questions. And it turned out they not only did they not have any evidence of any wrongdoing, they didn't even understand what they were investigating and the basic government programs involved. It was very embarrassing. And the deputy attorney general who was overseeing the whole thing at the end apologized to my attorney and assured them that it was all over. And I had hired an attorney in Texas who was very familiar with black budget litigation. So I called him and I said, oh, good news, it's all over. He said, no. He said, once that guy reports back in, they'll simply demote him and put a new guy on, and the new guy will be a very serious hitman. So sure enough, that's exactly what happened, and the new guy showed up. One of my attorneys used to call him the Sheriff of Nottingham, his name was Rudolph Contreras. And I bring this up because I was reading one of the articles on the various lawsuits related to the Clinton email. One of them is filed in U.S. District Court, and guess who the judge is? None other than the Honorable Rudolph Contreras, who moved over from the Department of Justice to become a U.S. District Judge in 2012. And so I can assure you whatever happens in that lawsuit is going to be based on whoever is pulling the strings and giving the orders. It's going to have nothing to do with the law, other than it's important to keep up appearances. And so I was a little bit stunned to see some of the same players. Contreras is not the only same player involved. But here's why I find this all baffling. It's clear that Clinton has not gotten intellectual mastery of the fundamentals, as if she's too important to be bothered. And she clearly didn't have this locked down, either with the people giving her air cover or her base. And she's in serious trouble because that air cover is not protecting her on this. It's clear from the way it's being allowed to bleed that her air cover has not necessarily in full, but has been pulled. Now, Biden wants to run. He's the vice president. There's no love lost between the Clintons and the Obamas. The administration controls the FBI, the Department of Justice, the Department of State. They're all part of the. So that leaves Clinton exposed if that machinery decides to really ensure that Biden gets a clear run. One name that hasn't come up yet is Kerry. Biden's polls are not good, and Kerry clearly has the experience and background, but he is very busy on the Iran deal, which ideally will get done by September 18th. So what it looks like to me is that there is significant gravitas both in the investment community on the Democratic side who's decided Clinton can't go the distance or some such thing and is making room for someone else to move up. It may be that the plunge in commodities is contributing. I suspect it is. There are a lot of large donors on both sides of the aisle that are beginning to feel the need for people highly competent to run the office of the presidency because the environment is clearly getting significantly more dangerous. A combination of global slowdown and plunging commodities is causing a lot of pain. And so on the Democratic side, my guess is you're going to see testing the waters for Biden, or if Biden just can't get there in the polls, Kerry or other variety of other people. On the Republican side, I think that's why you're seeing so much effort to sort of push Kasich forward. It wouldn't surprise me if you're seeing allies all throughout the Anglo-American Alliance and the British Commonwealth trying to make sure that people much more competent to lead the U.S. and be commander-in-chief are pushed into place. It'll be very interesting to see what happens over the next couple of weeks, but it would not surprise me to see Clinton not end up as the candidate. In fact, one possibility, and I'm sure from the text so far that clearly somebody's got the ability to do that. It wouldn't surprise me if she's offered a deal, which is either you step down or there's an indictment. And that's particularly because if they really target her key aides, that's going to get very, very uncomfortable because the politics of targeting them as well as her is really going to put her in a tricky position. So anyway, what it says is that, you know, the election is going to get a lot more interesting than it looked like several months ago. The heat wave. I just finished driving San Francisco to Pasadena to Palm Desert to Phoenix to Tucson, Midland, Texas, then now to Austin. Much of the way it was 105 to 117 when I stopped in Palm Desert. They said it had been 118 2 days ago. Everywhere I went, I saw hauling out of retail. I think a lot of that is online sales because many of the stores are reporting just less storefront sales, more rising internet sales. But you do get a sense of a feeling of economic exhaustion, all signs of deflation. Fits with what we're reading on the internet, including exploding demand at food banks and other places as more and more automation, more and more globalization, or people are falling through the tracks. Fall will be the test. So let's see what happens in the fall, because some of this still may be summer. I would note that Illinois just had a technical default on its bonds. It's not a payment default, but a lot, if you look at what's going on in the municipal market, too many situations, Illinois, Puerto Rico are showing signs of serious strain. Of course, Puerto Rico is a lot more than a technical default. They've had a payment default. But I would note Detroit, through bankruptcy, has now come out and sold $245 million of bonds this week. It's the first bond sale since default, and the yield was 4.5%. So there is a place you can get 4.5% in the market. There you are. Some stories I want you to pay attention to for personal reasons. The IRS now says the breach of taxpayers' data was far more widespread than it first thought, 610,000 taxpayers at risk. Please remember, any data you give the government is not secure. There's a wonderful interview. It's an old interview, but it's still relevant on identity theft in the archive, and it's worth listening to for some really good tips on how to protect yourself from identity theft, which is very important to do. Another story, NSA spying relies on AT&T's extreme willingness to help from ProPublica. There's a rule at Solari, no one can expend any money on AT&T without a personal waiver from me. I suspect that the NSA works for AT&T, not vice versa. The more you kill NSA powers, the more you leave the data to AT&T's control. But in my experience, you know, there are serious problems, some more with the telecoms than others, but the one we get the most complaints about, and I've heard the most complaints, and I've had the worst experiences with her, AT&T, so that one doesn't surprise me. Windows 10, we continue to hear dreadful things about it. I've posted several reviews on the blog. I would beware before you download Windows 10. I think you want to educate yourself on what the issues are and what are in the terms and conditions. I just recommended again to someone today, I find myself doing it at least once every couple of weeks, a documentary we did in Let's Go to the Movies called Terms and Conditions Apply. And when you deal with companies like AT&T and Microsoft, it's very, very important to read the terms and conditions because you cannot presume the best. Our hero this week is the town of Baldwin, Michigan, who pulled their money and sent the entire graduating high school class to college. The story is posted up on the website, and it's a lovely story for several reasons. One, because one of the things that helped was not that they raised the money to help pay for college, but by getting the whole town working on it and doing it, they changed the culture and got the kids really understanding that there was a future, understanding that everyone supported them in accomplishing that future. And so you really turned around the culture as well. It's a very interesting thing and very inspiring. It just goes to show you what a community can do when they pull together, particularly around supporting their kids. Ask Catherine. Dear Catherine, can you explain what happens when a country devalues its own currency? How are they able to do this themselves instead of the value of the currency being determined by the supply, demand, and exchange of it within the worldwide markets? Well, it gets complicated, but essentially they can set the price by being willing to buy and sell at that price. So, and this is particularly easy if you're a large country and you print the currency. The more float China has outside the country, the harder it is going to be to set a price that's different than where the market would set. Although, you know, you have players who are intervening around the world, so the market is more like a war rather than a market. But it's if you stand ready to exchange at that rate or buy and sell at that rate, then you have the ability to set it. One of the Chinese spokespeople who talked about the devaluation said, "We are the market. We can do whatever we want." It's a very interesting comment. Anyway, it's as I said, it's easier to do it when the rate you're setting is closer to what the market would produce. Harder when the market, you know, is significantly different, and that's why you saw the Swiss have to break the peg with the euro, and the Chinese break what is a sub rosa peg with the dollar. When the market price gets too far away from where you're setting the exchange, then it can get very, very expensive and very, very painful. Dear Catherine, for years now, we've been hearing about the massive derivative bubble that's going to pop and still nothing has happened. Has this all been hype? If not, what do you think the chances are of this really happening? The reason we've been hearing a lot of the hype is the people pushing a lot of that hype believe that these are private financial institution positions. I believe many of them are the private financial institutions acting as agent for governments. So many of these wrap up into government positions. The most significant part of the derivatives book outstanding are interest rate swaps. And that's been part of engineering the drop in interest rates down, down, down. The question is, what happens when interest rates start to rise? I don't know of anybody who understands that book well enough to know what that would mean. If it does start to unravel, it's, you know, to a certain extent, you can't allow this book of business to unravel. And so many, many possibilities all add up to war. where you're not going to permit a default on the derivatives. Instead, you're going to have a war, and the losers in the war basically collapse and are exploited by the winners and make up the whole. And that's as it has been in history. This is just a much bigger hole than we're used to having. Let's go to the movies. I chose Mr. Robot. One of our most astute subscribers, it really encouraged me to watch it. And I did. It's the story of a young cybersecurity expert. It's a new TV show who's got to navigate a world that very much represents what I was describing to you in the book review. One, it's a multipolar world. Force is not a monopoly of sovereign states, but, you know, private groups can exercise force and get away with it. Corporations can exercise force and get away with it. And again, as I describe in the book review of Modern Mercenary, it's a multipolar world, and that looks very different than anything we're used to. And navigating it requires a very different framework, and we'll be talking about that more for the foreseeable future. And the other thing is that warfare moves to the digital systems and invisible systems, and because of that, it moves into the most intimate aspects of our life. And Mr. Robot gives you a pretty good feeling of what that looks like and feels like, and the frustration of having that kind of invasiveness by multiple players. You know, to a certain extent, you're dealing with a world defined by what people can do as opposed to any kind of laws. Anyway, so take a look at it. It's a very interesting, you know, you almost can't believe it's on TV, but you can see TV is really having to push back and try and win back market share by trying to create shows that are much more real deal than what we watched 10 years ago. Our interview tonight is with Richard Dolan on False Flags. I very much wanted to get Richard to do an interview on that topic because false flags as a practice are evolving, and I think we're seeing more and more of them, which is partly because of the kind of technology we have and the existence of this kind of capacity on the private side. But false flags, in my opinion, are changing from just violent acts that are engineered to achieve a change in direction or a particular direction usually for government, to they're becoming much more staged. You're having the equivalent of a reality TV show, and it's organized and engineered to be profitable. So you're not think of it as something that has multiple goals. The event has to be profitable in itself. It could try and help you get certain legislation passed or start a war, but it's also got to create a lot of media entertainment and interest. And it generates enough profit so you create funds to buy off the victims and to fund processes where you blame the innocent. If you can't, usually you can sometimes use government to do that. But it's almost kind of a street theater, in my opinion, is what it's become. And the reality is, if the rest of us don't pretend it's real, we can end up as a target as well. It's very invasive. It can be very invasive on an intimate level. Anyway, I want to help you see these things clearly. And one of my goals, frankly, is to help you avoid them and not get sucked into believing any of them. I think the more we can see what's happening and not believe it and not give it our attention, the better off and safer we're all going to be. Anyway, so the more the policymakers use or rely on these kind of tactics, I would love to take the power out of it. And I think the more we see it as it is, the more power disappears from using them. So again, my goal is not to draw you into the heart of darkness, but I want to make sure that you don't get tricked or harmed by these things. So as always, Richard is a great guy to talk about and has tremendous mastery of the subject. So False Flags with Richard Dolan. Well, that's it for this week. Next week and the week after, I'm going to be talking about the fall. And so I would really encourage you to read the commentary that I wrote a week ago or a week and a half ago. It's up on the you can find it both on the left-hand side with all the commentaries. It's called What's Up This Fall 2015. Next week, I'm going to be talking with Dr. Laura Thompson about wellness and how we stay energized in this fall. I took one look at all the dates of sort of big events this fall, and I said, you know, this is going to be energetically very intense. And I said, we really need to think proactively about how to organize our schedule this fall. And part of that is staying well. So Laura agreed she'd join me, and we'll be talking about that on our interview next week. And then September 3rd, I want to talk about what's up this fall 2015. I know here at Solari we took our schedule and my travel schedule and integrated it with the list of events that I posted in the commentary, just to kind of see how we navigate this fall. And I would encourage you to do it, particularly if you live on the East Coast. The East Coast is going to be quite a hot spot. And so for those of you who are going to join me for lunch in Austin, Texas on Saturday, I look forward to seeing you in 2 days. And so, and for all the other subscribers, I'll be talking with you on August 27th with Dr. Laura Thompson. Until then, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck. Thank you.